שתי בתי נירן, האורג שני חוטן, הפוסע שני חוטן, התופר שני תפירוס, כוסי שני אוסיוס, all of that, כוסי שני אוסיוס, all of those are mentioned. So Tosis raises the question, Sarach lefarish, we have to explain, somebody has to explain. Lama pireish kadu v'oreg v'pitzeya v'chotofer v'kosei v'shir tzveim v'shar. Somebody has to explain why it is that some malachas get mentioned and other malachas don't. Some malachas get this detail and others don't. So for about 500 years, no one seemed to really take up this question, which I find itself quite fascinating. That after the 1700s, so there is an approach that became very popular to addressing this question, but it seems in between when Tosfos says tzarech, apparently tzarech is lav davka, tzarech is more a language of rishus than a real tzarech, but it's optional for somebody to explain what exactly is going on here. And eventually somebody did. Eventually, 500 years later, the Magen Avos and many others all took an approach to this question by saying that now, as I mentioned, part of the benefit of Chazara is besides its inherent benefit, but also now that we've seen later sugyas, we can understand the earlier sugyas even better in terms of how they cross-reference each other. So now that we've seen Chatzi Shir as a sugya, so we have a little bit more grounding in terms of this Tosfos. So we saw that Chatzi Shir, there is such an idea that an Aveira in general, or perhaps specifically a Malacha, can have a Shir, can have a quantity in order to be Chayiv, and less than that, it could be that it's still Aser. It could be it's still Aser Min HaTorah, as we discussed in that Sugya. So what some suggest here is that there is a difference between a Shir, which is kind of a detail, that a Malacha needs to have a certain territory in order for it to be significant. So in order for me to be chayiv in Hotzah, I have to carry something of significance. In order for me to be chayiv in Bishul, I have to cook something of significance. So all of that is a question of whether the action I'm doing, is it significant or not. While in terms of these things that the Mishnah lists, the question is more fundamental. Maybe it's not even a Malacha if it's missing this detail. Not that it's not significant, but that it doesn't even count as the malacha on the list. So there are different ways of saying this. There are those, like Reb Lazar Moshe Hurwitz and the Karen Ora and others, who seem to understand that it's just not going to last. It's not going to be effective. When we talk about Ha'oreg, if you're going to weave one thread, so we don't even know what that means practically. How's that even going to last as anything? So it's maybe not miskayin. That's how some understand. While others understand, like the Sfas Emes says, that it's definitional, that perhaps just the definition of the act is that you should do the two together. I think we mentioned the first time that the Levush Mordechai has a kind of a funny comparison about this, which gives us a moment of Yevamis unity, that we say, we know there's an Isra in the Torah to marry two sisters. This is a big first parak Yevamis topic. So it's also to marry two sisters. So maybe you should say, okay, so Chatzi Shir should be also to marry one sister. So very few hold like that, even the Machmirim, that doesn't make sense. The whole Isser doesn't even form until it reaches a certain threshold. So to here, perhaps it's simply definitional. The Malacha doesn't make sense until it has all these conditions in place. So the question is, whichever theory you take, you kind of hit a little bit of a roadblock when you get to kosev, because kosev, it's harder to say that it's nothing. If you write one letter, it's harder to say that's not going to last or that that doesn't have any significance. Why shouldn't the letter have significance? So that's the Irugus Abosim, for example, has a hard time with kosev. In general, that's the harder part of the puzzle to fit in. Rav Nelson Gishtadner has a tshuva where he raises that question, and he suggests that since the model of kosev was in the Mishkan, and why did they write in the Mishkan? They wrote because you needed to know when part A got together with slot A, so you need to have bringing two letters together is the whole yisod of the malacha, so therefore you don't have this malacha until you have two letters. Could be, but in general, the kosev issue is an issue that complicates everybody's approach. It's harder to have a theory to understand why this is when you'll look at kosev. Is it true about kosev? Is it true in general? So that's a good question. One halacha l'maisi discussion where this was discussed is the Tshuva Sarei Tzvi, the Kajigal of the Rav, has a tshuva about the forced army conscription in Europe and Russia, when people were forced to go to the army, and when they were brought into the army, so they would have to use their fingerprint and make a symbol with their finger. So that, he suggests, is a toldo of Kosev called Roshen. And if it's one finger, maybe that's like one letter. So is there a tzad to be more makeable based on that? Let's assume it's not direct pikuach nefesh. Let's assume it's something less than that. So is there a tzad to be makeable based on the idea that it's like Kosev one letter, and maybe that's not even a chatishir? So he happens not to be thrilled with that approach. Now again, to cross-reference, so we eventually mentioned that the Chazon Nachum has a tshuva about the exact same case, where he has a heter that he is more happy with, based on a combination of the idea of malacha she'etzricha l'gufa, because you're doing this against your will, essentially, and the idea of tolda she'etzricha l'gufa, that since Roshim is a tolda of Kosev, so we mentioned the approach that some have, that a tolda she'etzricha l'gufa is less than even a malacha she'etzricha l'gufa. So he did like that angle, but in terms of what we're talking about here, the Kajig lover invoked this question of maybe Kosev one letter, maybe should be not even a malacha, and tried to apply it here, but in the end was not incredibly happy with that approach. The Aven Ezer has a tshuva in which he explains this whole idea consistently with what we've said so far, noting the Rashbam of Bava Basra and Daf Nun Hey, again from the Chatzi Shir discussion. So the Rashba has a principle that a malacha that's done with less than a shir is a chisaron in malachas machshevas. So the Avi Nezer, building on that, he says that if you're missing a shir, that is a lack of machshevas. The things that are pointed out by this Tosfos, that's a lack in malachas. So if you carry around too small an item, if you cook too small an item, that's a lack of machshevas. If you write one letter, you're already one thread, that's a lack in malachas. Okay. So what does this mean? Halach l'maisa, these people saying that to write one letter is mutter. So it doesn't sound like it. Sounds certainly like from the Mishnah Berurah and others that it's asr. So does that contradict this approach? Probably not. So many assume that maybe it's asr midrabanan. But that maybe in a chanami, maybe this approach might be true on a level of Torah, that maybe it's really not a full-blown malacha, and the fact that we find the svarim asring this doesn't necessarily contradict this approach. There is a different approach that the Tiferes Yisrael has, and in the Sefer Makor Halacha of Rabbi Yamin Yeshua Zilber, so he suggests this approach as well, that maybe it goes in the opposite direction, that maybe the difference between the shiurim that are not mentioned in the Mishnah and the shiurim that are mentioned is that they come from opposite directions. That the shiur here is that maybe you would have thought that, let's say, when it comes to ariga or tefira or the like, that maybe I need much more than two threads. That maybe it's not a beged at all with two threads, and maybe that's not considered to be significant. So I would have thought that the shiur would have been larger. So the whole chiddush here is that this gives us a minimum in order to tell us that this is also called a malacha. So therefore, it's more of a chumrah than a kula. So the kula isn't mentioned. The fact that your patur was less than a shir of carrying or cooking or the like, so that's not the Mishnah's business. That's for a different discussion. But here, the chiyuv, the chiddush, that even less than a garment, even less than a word, let's say in the sense of kosev, is also potentially chayiv. That's why the Mishnah has to tell us l'chumra that you can become chayiv even on such a low threshold. The Tiferes Yisrael says that. Also, Rabbi Yamin Yoshua Zilber in his Makor Halacha says that. Hi.
So going back to what we said about the Menuka Yosef the other week, so the fact that Tosfos didn't bring this answer to his own question.
Right, so that's a big discussion also. So especially if you take the first approach, which has become the big popular approach, so what do you do with the fact that Tosfos doesn't say it? Do you worry about that or not? So that's an interesting question. There are those who bring that up. Again, this is kind of an open methodological question. How much do you let that bother you or not? The fact is, they don't give any other answer either. So if you want to open it to a general methodological question, how much attention do you pay to the fact that Rishon don't use your Yisod, but don't use any other principle either? So there's got to be some answer. presumably there's got to be some answer. So it could, I think it's a case-by-case basis how much weight to assign to those types of objections. But the question itself, you could ask how powerful it is. And I think also we have to see this in perspective in terms of going too far with assuming too much halakha l'maaseh and significance on the diyuk that Tosfos is making. Because when the Gemara learns something out from a pasuk, okay, so then a pasuk we assume has to be a chiddush, has to tell us something significant. If there was a separate Mishnah telling us this, again, we'd assume the Mishnah has to be there for a reason. What we have here is not a separate pasuk and not even a separate Mishnah. We have a Mishnah using a slightly different nuance in phrasing some of these words. So we assume it's significant. We assume that the Mishnayos were written carefully, but to go too far in forcing a halachic conclusion, I think I have to be a little bit wary, because it's not as necessary as when you have a pasuk, which clearly has to be there for something that is the chiddush. So there is, in the Sefer Makor Halacha of Rabbi Yehoshua Zilber was a great posek and a great Baal Musar. He passed away probably about 10 years ago. And he wrote a lot of Musar Sfarim anonymously. And Tshuvas, not anonymously. Because you can't write Tshuvas anonymously, don't take it so seriously. So the Tshuvas he wrote, the Tshuvas Az Nidbaru. An important Sefer of Tshuvas. He also wrote a separate volume where he talks about some Shabbos and Yanim and the like called Makor Halacha. So Makor Halacha, he talks about this approach. Then he also mentions Levi Yitzchak of Berdiche as an approach. So I mentioned for the synergy with Thursday, when we talked about Parsha on Thursday, so I got a lot of nachas when I saw his citation of Levi Yitzchak, because he mentioned on Thursday, talking about Parshas Chayisara, that there was a certain vort that Levi Yitzchak had, and how later Sfarim had questioned it, and we said a defense of his vort. And I mentioned the time, I thought there was a chiyuv to try to give a lamed zchus on Levi Yitzchak's Divrei Torah, because he was such a defender of Klal Yisrael, so Hakar Satov to try to defend his Divrei Torah. So that Rabbi Yeshua Zolber says the same thing. He quotes Yisod about this point from Levi Yitzchak, and then he asks Akashan, and he says, but I feel we have to defend him who spent so much time trying to defend all the Jews. We have to try to defend the Kedushas Levi. So he ends up doing that. But basically what he quotes from him is that Levi Yitzchak thought that maybe the significance of these shiurim, as opposed to the shiurim that the Mishnah doesn't mention, is that to get a full shiur, in other malachos, you could have a little bit here and a little bit there. Yeah, you could cook half a grogris here and half a grogris there. But in order to get a full shear in terms of these malachos, it has to all be in one place. So he has a kasha on that from a different gemara, which is what he tries to defend. But he basically understands that he thinks Reb Levi Yitzchak is basically saying the same thing as the Magen Avos. That the Magen Avos is saying that the other malachos, a shear is just about significance. The malach is happening, it just has to be significant enough. So if you get enough significance from wherever you get it, it adds up to enough significant behavior, so then you're going to be fine. But in terms of these things that the Mishnah talks about, so there, it's not just a question of significance. The malacha doesn't happen at all if they're not all happening. So therefore, we need it all to happen in one place in order for us to even have kosev, in order for us to have ariga. We need it all to happen together. You can't have half here and half there. That's not going to count. So he assumes that essentially that's what Reb Levi Yitzchak is saying is really the same thing the Magen Avos is saying. They have different ways of expressing it, but they're saying that the other shiurim the Mishnah doesn't talk about are about significance, while the shiurim the Mishnah does talk about are more definitional in nature. It's saying that you need to have all of this together in order to even have a malacha. Anything less than that is not noteworthy. Okay, any questions on that? That makes sense, more or less? Okay, so then let's try to move now into Zareya. So, the first of our malachos, although, as we've noted, it's somewhat of a machlokus whether or not it should be the first of the malachos, which is what the Gemara picks up on a little bit, Hanayim Gimel and Beis. That really, strictly speaking, you think that you need to do an act of Charisha before an act of Zriya, and the Gemara has an answer for that. So we follow the Seder of the Mishnah here. We're assuming that we'll talk about Zareya first, but the Rambam didn't follow that. The Rambam in his list puts Charisha first. Maybe we'll talk about that more when we chazal Charisha, but we're going to start with Zriya. So the first question, the topic we've been talking about a second ago, what is the shear for Zriya? Is there a shir for Zriya? So Rashi confuses us a little bit. It's often thought, this is the way the Prima Gadim understands, that it's a machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam as to whether or not there is any shir for Zriya. That the Rambam says it's a kol shehu, which we assume is a way of saying there's no shir. Kol shehu could either mean there is such a small shir it's not significant, or there's no shir. So that's how the Rambam understands Zareya. There's a question what Rashi's position is. Because Rashi says that shir, after talking to Rashi Ha'ofe, where he talks about the whole Siddur the Pas issue that he doesn't hold from, then he says, V'shirin shel elu, this whole first section, this first 11 malachos, the shiurim are kigrogris, like a dried fig, chutz mi choresh to bekol shehu, with the exception of choresh, which is a kol shehu, as we see in the Gemara later on, in Habona and Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Mishnah makes it clear that a choresh is a kol shehu. So if he says everything is a grogris except for a choresh, it sounds like he's saying that Zareya is a grogris. So that's how many read Rashi. The Rashi says it's a grogris, and the Rambam says it is a kol shehu. As we'll see in a second, it could be that it's not so clear that that's really what Rashi means. But if that's the case, so the assumption is that the Rambam's opinion is based on the fact that a kol shehu can give you something big. And when we talk about Zareya, you don't need a lot to turn into something much bigger. And therefore, any amount of Zriya is going to potentially create something large. So there are those who suggest, for example, like the contemporary Sefer Bikuri Yitzchak, that maybe this corresponds to the same issue we talked about in our introduction, that maybe Rashi is more focused on the individual. He's got to be doing something significant, while the Rambam is focused on the result, and therefore, since this can turn into a big plant, we don't care that he used something very small to bring that about, while Rashi feels there would have to be a shear in the act of planting. However, as we indicated, there are those who think Rashi himself agrees. And maybe Rashi doesn't think that it's really a grogris, but Rashi agrees that it's a kol shehu. So then, how do we understand what we just read? Doesn't that seem to contradict what he writes here? He writes everything other than choresh is going to have to be a grogris. So there are different ways to read Rashi. There are those who suggest, like the Arugas HaBosem, that he means everything from choresh on. So apparently he's assuming that Zareya is before choresh. So everything after choresh is a grogris. Not just accepting choresh, but accepting Zareya as well.
Speaking of Zareya is before choresh.
Correct. Right. Others suggest that maybe he's picking on choresh specifically because it's an explicit Mishnah, but he really thinks that it's everything from choresh on, that it's really Zareya and choresh are both not a grogris. Rav Simcha Zissel Broyd in the Sefer Sam Derech, he says that no, there's a qualitative difference here, that when it comes to all the other malachos, so all the other malachos are about food. They're about doing something to a food item. So grogris is a shear of food. While before you get to that stage, so then we're not talking about food yet. So there's no reason for Zriya to be a grogris shear because you're not being Zareya food. You are harvesting and gathering and cooking and kneading the food. But before that, it's not food. So therefore, grogris is not a relevant shear. And we mentioned also that... yes, sir?
Just wondering, in terms of Zareya, how would you measure like the grogris of growth of the plant?
Of the seeds, what you put into the ground.
So that's the only thing we're measuring now, like if you rewire it.
Right, we're talking about what you put into it to begin with, which is why the assumption is that maybe the Rambam's not interested in that because he's interested in what grows, and therefore, since he doesn't know what grows, he doesn't care what goes in. Any amount that goes in can bring about something bigger than that. Rav Asher Weiss assumes that the shear is really somewhere in the middle, that it's really a few seeds. So the Mishnah says later on that you could be chayiv for carrying a few seeds because that's significant for usage purposes. So therefore, Rashi didn't bother distinguishing because it's a little more than a kol shehu and it's closer to a grogris already. So he doesn't really mean that grogris is the standard, but the standard is close enough to a grogris, which is pretty small to begin with, that he didn't feel a need to distinguish. Okay, so all of that is possible. So that issue aside, we then moved on to noting that the Yerushalmi is a little bit surprising, that the Yerushalmi, we talked about this a little bit in the introduction also, the Yerushalmi lists a whole bunch of actions that are associated with Zareya. Anything that helps improve the plant or the tree is considered to be Zareya. But included in this list are many items which seem to be negative in nature. For example, smoking out a plant to get rid of insects, or taking the worms out, things like that, which might have been categorized mavriach ari. Mavriach ari is an expression which means chasing away a lion, that sometimes you find that that's not viewed as an actual action. An action is something you do, while chasing away a damaging influence is something more preventing a negative. So it's a chiddush to say that something that's not productive but stops a problem is considered to be a malacha. Hi.
Is that considered to be the malacha, or is it considered to be a
tolda? That's a good question. It's itself not 100% clear. Very possibly a tolda. Probably a tolda. But even a tolda, so that's a deraisa, so that's surprising. So the Chelkas Yov thinks it's even less than that. The Chelkas Yov thinks it must be derabanan, because mavriach ari is generally not considered to be an action. And there are others like the Shvisas HaShavis, and Daniel was telling me that in the Taurus Malachas you'll find the whole list. Of those who assume that Shabbos is unique, that you say that Mavriach Ari is Chayiv, even though it's not the usual standard. So we mentioned that during the introduction last week, we mentioned that Rav Nissim Karelitz in his Shiurim suggests this is unique to Shabbos as opposed to Shemitah, which is not how everyone understands it, because Shemitah is about the Chavta, is about getting the land cultivated. So therefore, we're only going to be interested in that which moves the land forward. While when it comes to the malacha of Zareya, as a malacha of Shabbos, so then if we're focused on you are not being at rest, so then we're interested in what you are doing, that you are acting upon this plant, regardless of whether it moves the plant forward or stops it from having problems, it's still considered to be an act of Zareya as far as your lack of menucha. So it's still disturbing yourself to work on this plant, you're still taking yourself out of rest, so that's the malach of Zareya, regardless if the effect that it has is a positive effect or one of keeping away a negative. Hi.
Considering what we said about opening the window to, let's say, get more sun on the plant, so what do you say this, too, is also like a psikoresha? Like, by you stopping the line, it's obviously going to psikoresha and help the plant.
But you're saying in addition it would be a psikoresha.
That on its own will get an answer there, right?
Assuming that helping is also inclusive of stopping problems.
Still stopping
problems. Right, so that's itself the chiddush. Right? So clearly you're doing something that's benefiting, that's in the interest of the plant, but it's a chiddush to say something that stops a negative is also included. So that's perhaps a unique aspect of Zareya, perhaps it's a unique aspect of Shabbos in general, so there is somewhat of a clash over that. So I mentioned that Rabbi Yitzchok Zilberstein has in his Sefer Chashuk Yechemet a little bit of an interesting question. So how far would you go with that? So is that about bringing it to perfection? So let's say you have a plant that has a lot of worms in it. So would you have to take out all the worms? If you take out one worm, it's still at risk. So is it about getting it away from risk? Or is it about any action that you do that is a step in this process is also considered to be Zareya? So he assumes that if you take out one worm, that's also considered to be Zareya. A little bit of discussion about it, but he assumes that that's the case. He also has a discussion that the Har Tzvi, the Tzvi Pesach Frank, has a tshuva, that let's say you have you're living in Egypt during the time of the Makos, or you're living in the kibbutz in Eretz Yisrael, was actually the situation that he was asked about, where they had locusts. They had arbe descending upon them. So if they wanted to spray the air to scare away the locusts, they wanted to put poison in the air, something like that, So is that a malacha? So R.C. Pesach Frank talks about it from a couple of different angles, but he does not talk about it from the Zareya angle. So why is it not Zareya? So he assumes that even if we say that it's negative, that it's stopping a negative is also called Zareya, presumably that means a negative that is within the plant. If you're chasing away something that is already inside the plant, it has to be removed. So then that could be considered to be Zareya. But if there's something coming from outside, and you're trying to stop it from coming in the first place, so then that's presumably something else. That's presumably not Zareya. And along the same lines, he talks about a scarecrow. He says to put up a scarecrow could have other issues, could have bone issues, probably does have a number of other issues, but in terms of being Zareya, because it protects the crops from the birds coming, so he doesn't think you would go so far as to call that Zareya, just because taking the worms that are already in the plant out would be scaring away the crows or the locusts in the first place, doesn't think necessarily would be included in that. Okay, so far so good? All right, so then this got us into the major discussion in Zareya, which is one of the bigger discussions as far as the malachas go. The question, the basic definitional issue that we have with Zareya, big machlokas, is to how to understand what exactly is the mechanism of Zareya. That we could assume that if I take a seed and I put it in that coffee cup, so that's probably not Zareya. Putting a seed into something that's not going to cause it to grow in any way is presumably not an act of planting. So if the case is true that I need there to be some fertilization of this seed, I need the seed to take, to sprout, in order for it to count to be Zareya, so then how could I ever be in violation of Zareya on Shabbos? Now we know that this takes some time, and it's a little bit of a machlokas in the Gemara, but let's assume 3 days. It's going to take 3 days for this seed to take root. So Shabbos is never that long, no matter how many chumras you pile onto it. And so you're not going to, ben tam and everything else, you're not going to get a 3-day Shabbos. So how will it ever happen that you're going to plant a seed on Shabbos and it's going to take root and you're going to be chayav? So this was a major, major debate, which is represented, even though many get involved on both sides, and we'll just briefly touch upon some of them. We won't try to list everybody who gets involved, but this is primarily known as a machlokas between the Rashash and Cheskinach, even though there were Rishonim who probably were involved in it, even though there were maybe even Amoraim at some point out who were arguing along these lines. You could find this machlokas reverberating across the generations all over the place, but the ones who really zochet to get their names on this machlokas were the Rashash and the Chassinuch, who, as we mentioned, were almost exact contemporaries living in the 1800s, almost lived the exact same lifespan. So essentially, the way they understand it is as follows. According to the Rashash, you are chayav for Zareya on contingency. That you are chayav when you plant it on Shabbos, assuming that it actually takes root after Shabbos. So if you were to come on Sunday and uproot the seeds, to take the seeds out of the ground, so then that would negate your chayav. Then you're not going to be chayav. It's all contingent on what happens later. I gave the mushul at the time, the time when I tried to register to vote, and I sent in a fax on the last day of the deadline, and then they told me that you have to mail it in because they can't accept the fax. And I said, if I mail it in, it's not going to get there on time. So they said that, no, it's okay, because once they get in the mail, they'll accept my fax, the mafreya. And the fax will be accepted on the day that it was given in, contingent on their getting the signed signature in the mail later on. So what do you see from there? That I registered on the day that I faxed it in, contingent that later on they are able to verify the signature physically. So too, he says, if it turns out that there is a malacha here, it turns out that it sprouts, so then you did the malacha on Shabbos. And the Menachas Chinuch disagrees with this. The Menachas Chinuch understands that it's basically the malacha, you have to assume, for various reasons, that the malacha is putting it in the ground with intention to have it sprout, or at least putting it into the ground. that is the act, that is the tzura of Zoreh. And whatever happens afterwards doesn't matter. If you put it into the ground, that's considered to be planting it, even if you come and uproot it later on. Yes, sir.
So another Rosh Hashanah was talking about if someone, let's say, takes it out after. Mm-hmm. What if by you did everything right and Kavanah by freak of nature just didn't happen to grow? Would he also say that your puns are there?
Yes. Let's say that he dodged a bullet then, that if it doesn't sprout, then you're not going to be chayav. Hi.
According to Chassidut, then why would you be chayav to bring a seed in a plastic cup?
Because there's no potential for it to grow. So that's not an act of Zariah. But putting it there where it's supposed to grow, right, that's considered to be an act of Zariah. And then we're not focused on whatever happens later.
So, I mean, the whole point is that bringing it on the ground makes it impossible to take root.
Correct.
But, so it doesn't have to matter.
And that becomes the tzura of the malacha.
Just
right?
That it's possible.
Correct. And because he says that, so, in addition to his, therefore, disagreeing with the conclusion of the Rashash, the very practical conclusion that you can undo the malacha later, but it also provokes a whole other question, that what is the difference between Zriya and Afia, and baking? Because there is a Gemara on Daf Dalet. The Gemara talks about a broad question of when you're allowed to do small averes to prevent big averes. So as an example, you're allowed to do it on somebody else's behalf, you're allowed to do it on your own behalf. So in the context of that, the Gemara discusses, let's say somebody has put bread in the oven to bake. And then, after he does that, he becomes a Baal Tshuva, and he decides that he doesn't want to be Mechal Shabbos, so he wants to take the bread out of the oven. So the problem is, taking the bread out of the oven is called Radia Sapas, a different type of system that we have nowadays. So that's an Issa de Rabbanon. So the question the Gemara wants to know is, do we allow the Issa de Rabbanon in order to prevent the Issa de Raisa? Like I mentioned parenthetically, it's just interesting that the Kudsh Glover has a whole approach here, because Tosfos seems to assume that even if he's not allowed to do it, he's not going to be Chayev Zgila if he leaves it in. So it's a question why that should be. So the Kudsh Glover assumes that normally when a person does an Aveira and he's Chayev Misa for, so even if he says afterwards he did Tshuva, so we still Chayev Misa, Tshuva doesn't help. So it's a question why it doesn't help. Zwingli has an essay about this. Others talk about this. Why should it be that we don't accept tshuva? God accepts tshuva, but the bezdin of human beings doesn't accept tshuva. So some assume that really we'd like the bezdin of human beings to accept tshuva also. But everyone will claim they did tshuva. No one's going to be able to prove that they really did tshuva. The whole system's going to fall apart. So the Kudsh Glover suggested, well, here you have a great proof that you did tshuva. Because why did you leave it in the oven? Because you're so frum, you follow the Rabbanim, you're not going to take it out. So clearly, you've had a change of heart in terms of you're violating Shabbos, because you could have saved your life by taking it out of the oven, but you're so Shomer Shabbos now that you're even Shomer the Rabbanim, so that's a good proof that you really have done Tshuva on your original Chol Shabbos. That's how he suggests. So in any case, whatever the practicalities are, the Gemara seems to assume, underlying this whole discussion, what's the Gemara assuming? That if I put something in the oven, and I take it out before it cooks, I'm not chayav. So that's a big question that the Ben Chasrinach and others are forced to confront. That you could have assumed that there's a parallel structure here between baking and planting. That they both involve starting a process, some time passes, and then ultimately that process develops. So it sounds like in the case of Bishul, if I stop that process in the middle, I'm going to be potter. Well, in the case of Zriya, says the Milchas Chinuch, if I stop that process, the middle doesn't matter. Once I started it, once I put it in the ground, I'm already chayav. The Rashash doesn't have to worry about this so much, because the Rashash thinks in both cases that they're basically the same. That you can interrupt them in the middle, and you'll be potter. But according to the Milchas Chinuch, what are you going to say? So there's two consequences to the comparison or lack of comparison. The Rashash, who holds they're the same, holds you can interrupt them both in the middle, so therefore you can take the bread out of the oven or you can take the seeds out of the ground. But also, it works in the other direction, because since the Rosh Hashanah holds, you can be chayiv on Shabbos for the seeds that will be sprouting after Shabbos. So what would happen if you put something in the oven right before Shabbos was over, and it bakes after Shabbos? So according to the Rosh Hashanah, you're chayiv for that too. Because that's the yisod, the same way it works when it comes to planting, you could be chayiv for something that happens after Shabbos because it started on Shabbos. So too, this works here as well.
Will the
Mechassinim would hold that if the malacha has to happen beginning and ending on Shabbos.
Yeah, but according to Mechassinim, the malacha is just putting the seed in the ground.
Correct. So when it comes to Zriya, so that is the whole malacha. When it comes to Bishul, it's both. And that's because he has to deal with the fact that the Gemara says you can interrupt it. So apparently the ending has to happen on Shabbos. Apparently the ending has to happen for you to be chayiv, and he assumes it has to happen on Shabbos. That's how he understands. So there's two important differences between the Rosh Hashanah and the Chassinah. Whether you can interrupt Zriya in the middle, and whether you can be chayiv for something that doesn't finish on Shabbos itself. So we'll talk about some of the nuances of that, but just in terms of the shitas on this issue, so the Avnei Nezer is really somewhere in the middle. The Avnei Nezer basically agrees with the Minchas Chinuch that putting it in right away is the malacha, pretty much regardless of what happens later. He does have an exception though. He says if you do have intent to take it out later, so then he thinks then you would still be pater. That the case where the Menachas Chinuch, where he agrees with the Menachas Chinuch that it doesn't matter if you take it out later, that's if you change your mind. But if your intent from the very beginning was to put it in and take it out on Sunday, so then you're basically not even called planting. That's called storing it in the ground, and that's not something you are going to be chayav for. So the Menachas Chinuch himself disagrees with that. Both the Menachas Chinuch and the Menachas Shlomo, no relation, Shlomo Zalman Arbach, 100 years later, both basically assume that they don't think there's any kind of difference here, because, so let's say you intend to take it out, why is that any different from Bona Almanas Listor? If you build something and you have intent to knock it down, so then no one would say you're putter for that, you're still considered to be Bona on Shabbos. So too, just because you intend to undo this malacha the next day, doesn't mean it's not a malacha now. Ah, very good. So there are those who say, like Ephraim, that it's not comparable. It's like the Talmalacha says like this. Rav Gutman, the Talmalacha writes, exactly like Ephraim says, that he doesn't think it's the same kind of thing, that when it comes to bonus, so I have a building now, so the fact that I plan on knocking it down the next day doesn't take away from the fact that it is a building. In the case of Zriya, what the Avinezer is trying to say is that he doesn't think that it's called an act of Zriya if you plan on coming back and getting it later. If you put it there with the intent not to let it sprout, so then he doesn't think that's even called Zriya. That Zriya, by its nature, requires a certain intent combined with the action, and that's not going to be the case. So some discussion about whether or not his position is supportable, but basically that gives us three positions. The Rosh Hashanah, that if anything interrupts it later, you're a pater, even if you change your mind, you can do tshuva, you can have an epiphany, whatever it is, you can, somebody else can save you, the weather can save you, whatever it is, you're going to be pater. According to Menachas Chinuch, nothing can save you, once you put it in, you can do tshuva, but you can undo this malacha. And according to the Avinezer, somewhere in the middle, he agrees with Menachas Chinuch that it's basically what's done is done, but if your intention at the beginning was not to have it last, then that's not going to be an active Zriya. Jonathan, up first.
But with the Rosh Hashanah, if he's saying it's basically stunning the results, so would he say that for anything you would add on extra, like during that 2-day period, you're watering or anything, you would still be positive for that if it didn't take root?
That's an interesting question. But, if you were able to just focus on this one plant somehow, and just, it's very hard type of scenario, because if you're watering the ground, you're watering other things too. That are,
that's a chain or not, but it's a potted plant.
Right, so pot of plant, and then you end up, so you have just soil that has nothing in it, and then you just put this one seed in, and then you water it, yes.
They need to chew
and then you uproot the whole thing. Sorry?
I don't
pronounce it
Shein Onaku. Well, so if it's real, yeah. Right. So he's assuming if it is real.
It's real.
Right. So if you put all the positions together, yeah, I guess theoretically you could put a scenario where everything gets uprooted, but you'd have a hard time. You'd have to put together enough shittas and enough messias that you only just worked on this one seed. So it's a little complicated, but presumably would agree with that. Okay, so those are the basic shittas on that question, which leave us with two basic sub-issues to consider. One issue is, why is there a distinction between Zriya and Afiyah, according to the Mechassinuch, if you sign on to him? And what about this issue of Malacha that finishes after Shabbos? Is it really true that you can be Chayiv on Shabbos for a Malacha that doesn't really kick in until after Shabbos? So, first questions first, why is it that you should be distinguishing between Zriya and Afiyah? So we mentioned a lot of different approaches. Again, I want to emphasize that the fact that I share all these approaches with you and the different names involved should not create a pressure for you to feel you have to memorize all these things. Not the kind of thing I'm necessarily imposing on you. I'm mentioning it because I think it's useful and interesting. I hope you find it useful and interesting also, but it should not necessarily give you the mentality that if you don't remember all these names or even all these approaches, that that's necessarily a problem. But in any event, we did discuss quite a few approaches as to why this should be, why should there be a distinction. So the Menachas Chinuch himself is focused on a linguistic difference. He understands that this is what the words mean. He thinks that Zriya means putting something in the ground, and Afiyah means baking something to completion. To stay a little bit further, so you could say also linguistically, that if you ask somebody who has bread in the oven, did you bake that bread? So he'll probably say, I'm baking it right now. And if you ask somebody who put seeds in the ground, did you plant the seeds? So they won't say, yeah, I'm in the process of planting it right now. They'll say, yeah, I planted it yesterday, and we'll see what happens. So in terms of planting, the language is past tense once you put it in the ground. But in terms of cooking and baking, so we use present tense language until it's finished, which is probably indicative of something. So that's approach that, so for example, like Rav Scheinberg writes in the Mishmar Eschaim, that the person who has bread in the oven is going to have somewhat of a focus on that or somewhat of an awareness that he has food in the oven, or bread in the oven until it's baked, while somebody who puts seeds in the ground can essentially forget about it, doesn't have to think about it until it produces what it's meant to produce. So that's part of the difference. There's also a few other approaches. You know, like the Halachas Kitanis, who focuses on the fact that cooking still requires your involvement. You have to stir the pot, you have to flip the bread, you have to do whatever it is in order to bring it to that final stage while planting you're essentially finished. I also mentioned the possibility that essentially when it comes to an oven, even though ovens are very old inventions, but basically ovens are essentially inventions that keep you from having to hold your hot dog over the fire the whole time. Really, cooking essentially requires you to hold this item over the fire. Happens to be that we built something that makes it into a box that you can leave it in the box, you don't have to stand there the whole time. But that's really what the act of cooking requires. While the act of planting is not about your standing there with a seed in the ground until it sprouts, you're really done. You've done your part. You can move on. Others suggest similar approaches with different nuances. The Afika Yam, who has extensive writing about the Malachos, notes that you simply have to say like this, because if there's a Chiyuv Zarei on Shabbos, so therefore we're forced backwards to say that since this is all that can take place on Shabbos, therefore that is what the whole Malacha is. And Zriya is not necessarily subject to the same rules as Afiyah. Some Achronim mentioned the point that perhaps once you put the seeds into the ground, so then the seeds are now bottled to the ground, so you're essentially finished with them. While the bread is not bottled to anything, the bread is baking by itself, and it's not considered to be baked until it's actually done. Rav Asher Weiss mentions a difference that when it comes to bishul, so bishul is not something that we find in nature. It's not something that nature does. It's something that we do. So we use fire in order to do it. So that's a a malachas adam, that's something that people do. While when it comes to zriya, so things grow in nature all the time. Things are basically a product of nature. So your malacha is prompting nature to do this, but then the growth at that point is a natural process which you are essentially separated from. So that's another distinction. We mentioned before that Rav Simcha Zissel Broyd, when he talked about the shear of Zriya, and he said that you shouldn't assume it's a grogerus, because grogerus is a food shear, while the planting is not about food. Planting is an avodas karka, something to do with the ground. So he says, so too here, there's a difference between baking and planting, that baking is a food malacha, and planting is something you do to the ground. So food malacha is not finished until the food is finished. While as soon as the ground has been seeded, so then you've done the malacha of Zareya. It's all based on how you've interacted with the ground. So those are some distinctions that are made. In general, Tzvi Pesach Frank raises a question that he brings other proofs to point to his point that he doesn't think that we have any obligation to assume that the malachos of Shabbos work on the same standard as each other. And this is essentially a broader question when it comes to Shabbos. Should we assume that all malachas are working off the same rules and the same type of structure, and therefore if we find one structure by one, we have to find that structure by the others? Or should we say no, they don't necessarily have to follow the same rules, and it could be that afiyah works one way, and you take the oven, take the bread out of the oven, your butter, and it could be that Zriya works another way, and it's not a kasha, it doesn't have to keep us up at night. Why it is that I can interrupt Bishul in the middle and I can't interrupt Zriya in the middle? They're two different malachas, they have two different systems. So we have a raya from the Gemara that Bishul could be interrupted in the middle. We don't have that possibility when it comes to Zriya. Fine, I'm not bothered, I can sleep at night. That's his basic approach. It's also, in general, parenthetically, a question: if you have an action that is, let's say, prohibited on Shabbos and also has relevance in other halachic areas, so should we assume that they have to have consistent definitions across the Torah when it comes to Bishul on Shabbos and Bishul Bas V'Chalav, when it comes to Zriya on Shabbos and Zriya Skilayim? Do we have to assume that the actions are defined consistently across the whole Torah? So that's itself a question. So here we also have the question, just within Shabbos, is it necessarily a given that the malachas are going to work off consistent rules? Maybe not. That's the premise that Tzvi Pesach Frank asserts. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so this premise that the Rashash has, that you can be chayev for malacha that happens after Shabbos, so that itself was a very controversial premise. The Chalkis Yoav agreed with this. The Chalkis Yoav was a student of the Avnei Nezer, and even though the Avnei Nezer is mostly on the Mechas Chinuch side, so here there was a little bit of disturbance in the yeshiva of the Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer, because the Chalkis Yoav saw it differently. The Chalkis Yoav sided with the Rashash and felt that you could have a malacha that you're chayev for, even if it takes place after Shabbos. And he wrote letters to a lot of his classmates, I guess, in the yeshivas of the Nezer, and to other contemporaries, some who agreed, some of whom didn't agree. The Sfas Emes also had this view. The Sfas Emes thought there was a proof from Yerushalmi. Others understood it's Yerushalmi the other way. We won't, in the interest of time, we won't go into details about the proof from Yerushalmi. You can look it inside. It's two Yerushalmis, one's in Parak Aleph, Halacha Hey, and one's in Halacha Vav of Shabbos, and then we won't focus on the details today. But the Sfas Emes also thought that there was a raya from Yerushalmi that you can be chayy for something after Shabbos. And the Maharsham also agreed with this. The Maharsham wrote a letter to the Chalkis Yoav where he says he thinks that the Chalkis Yoav's got a good point. There are those who, interestingly, including the Maharsham, who tied this into the Nimukei Yosef that we mentioned last week. Right? We mentioned the Nimukei Yosef and raised the question of how is it that you can be allowed to have Shabbos candles burning. But if we say Eishav Mishum Chetziv, the fire is like an arrow, so aren't you liable for your fire damage as if you are doing it directly? So therefore we should say that your fire burning is something that you are doing on Shabbos, your candles being lit, it's as if you are lighting the candles on Shabbos yourself. So how did the Nebuki Yosef answer that? He said, no, that even though it's like you're doing it, but it all goes back to when you did your physical part. So since you lit the candles Friday afternoon, so yes, you are liable for all of the burning of the candles, but at the moment that you lit them, it all rolls back into that initial moment. So based on that, the Marsham and others say that, that other malachos work that way as well. But if I do an action on Shabbos and it plays out after Shabbos, but I did my physical part on Shabbos, that's all that matters. It all rolls back into that first minute. So therefore, he thinks that you can extrapolate from this Nimuki Yosef into other things. And you can say that if I put something in the oven on Shabbos and it cooks after Shabbos, it all goes back to my first initial placing in the oven, and that's all considered to be a malacha that took place on Shabbos. So that's one approach consistent with the Rashash and the Chalkes Yoav. And there are many others who disagree with this. The Kli Chemda, who was also a Talmud of the Avinezer, so the Kli Chemda disagreed with his classmate, the Chalkes Yoav, about this. The Imri Yosher also disagreed, wrote a letter to the Chalkes Yoav as well. And they make the point that the obligation, this also somewhat correlates, we talked about last week, that if the Rashash is right, for example, that you can interrupt the malacha by taking the seeds out of the ground, so essentially you're chayav to do that. And that's essentially what we mean, that to prevent the malacha, you're obligated to come on Sunday and take the seeds out of the ground. So could that be? Could it be that Shmira Shabbos requires you to do something on Sunday? So they assume that that's not feasible, that Shmira Shabbos can only take place on Shabbos. And the Torah says 6 days of the week you work, one day you have Shabbos. So it can't be that being Shomer Shabbos requires you to do something on Sunday. To say that you have to come on Sunday and undo your malacha in order for that to not be a malacha, working backwards, it says that's got to be impossible. That's structurally can't be the case. And therefore, that's not practically possible. Hi. It's a work backwards way of working, but it's essentially saying that since it can't be that there's any obligation on Motzi Shabbos to keep Shabbos, therefore everything has to be localized to what's happening on Shabbos itself. Okay, so there is a question that was raised on the whole Minchas Chinuch approach. Gedalia Felder in his Sefer Yisodi Assurance, so he notes that in Shulchan Aruch it's Paskin that if somebody wants to put seeds on the ground for his chickens to eat, so he's allowed to do that. And if he has wants to put 1 day's worth of seeds, that's good. They'll eat 1 day's worth of seeds. If they're going to eat 2 days' worth of seeds, great. If you're going to put 3 days' worth of seeds, that's going to be a problem because they're not going to eat it by the third day, and then it's going to take root. So he's saying, fine, don't do it in such a way that the seeds are going to be around in the ground for 3 days because then it's going to take root. But it sounds like the Shulchan Aruch is saying that if it's going to get eaten up before the third day, then it's okay. So he asks, why is that any different than the Menchas Chinuch? Right? The Menchas Chinuch says that if you put seeds in the ground, but it gets taken out before the third day, it doesn't help, you're chayev. And here it says that if you put seeds in the ground, but they are in the ground, but they get eaten up before the third day, you're okay. So what's the difference? So we mentioned two approaches. Two approaches were both suggested in the Sefer Iyunim Bahalacha. One approach was that this is not called a Maaseh Zriyah, that the Menchas Chinuch saying that if you do a Maaseh Zriyah, then we don't care if it's going to get uprooted later. But here, this is not a Maaseh Zriyah, this is a Maaseh of feeding your animals. It just happens to be that if you're going to put more than 3 days' worth there, then it's going to be a Psik Resha, it's going to turn into a Maaseh Zriyah. But here, without intent for that to be there for that purpose, that's not called a Maaseh Zriyah. And the second approach, which I think we found will be a little bit more compelling, is that if you know that it's likely, or the plan is, that the chickens are going to eat up all these seeds before the time comes, so then that's presumably planting in a ground that's not arable. That's like planting in a desert. That there's different reasons why it's not shy for the seeds to sprout. So it could be that the land itself doesn't support growth, or it could be the land could theoretically support growth, but the external forces are such that it's not going to last that long. So either way, it ends up being a makom she'eino ra'i lizriya, and a ra'i litzmicha, not being going to be able to grow. And therefore, presumably, that's the difference between the Menchas Tzimuch and the case that Shulchan Aruch is talking about. Menchas Tzimuch is talking about a case where you're putting seeds in the ground where they can and are likely to grow. It just happens to be you stop it from happening. And here, you are not putting it there with the intent for it to grow, nor is it necessarily likely that it is going to grow. And therefore, all those factors together are going to negate the melach. Okay. So to move on to another topic, but just the first note that just this whole Rashash Menchas Tzimuch question, so there are those who suggest that this maybe ties into the broader Hilchos Shabbos question about whether we're interested in the person's action or we're interested in a malacha taking place, that it seems like the Menchas Tzimuch has a more person-based definition. That's all about you're putting the seed into the ground, and that's all that matters. And the Rashash perhaps has a more effect on the world kind of definition, that you're not supposed to cause a Zriya, and then the question is, how is that possible to cause the Zriya on Shabbos? That's where he gets into his difficulty. By the way, a mashal that we used to explain the Menchas Chinuch was, let's say if somebody shoots somebody, and she shoots them in January, and they die in March, so when did he commit murder? He committed murder presumably in January when he shot the guy. When did the guy die? The guy died in March. Is that a contradiction? No, presumably not. It depends what we're interested in. If we're interested in when this guy committed his crime, he committed his crime in January. If we're interested in when the person actually died, so he died in March. So the Menchas Chinuch would agree that as far as the seed being planted, the seed is planted when it actually takes root. As far as when you planted the seed when you did your action, when you put it in on Shabbos, regardless of how it plays out later. Okay, so another major issue, and a lot of the issues end up plugging back into the Rashash Menchas Chinuch, which is such an overwhelming topic in Zriya that it keeps coming up again and again. But essentially a separate issue is the question of an atzitz naku first. It's a separate discussion of a potted plant that has holes and that doesn't have holes. So first we talked about a plant that has holes, an atzitz naku. So there is a sugi in the Gemara in Pei Aleph in the Beis where the Gemara talks about somebody who has an atzitz naku that is on the ground. So if you have a potted plant that has holes in it and it's on the ground, so it's nourishing from the ground directly. And if you lift it up and you put it on pegs, so then it's going to be separated from the ground. So then there's going to be a little bit of distance. It's not going to grow as quickly, as powerfully as it did beforehand. So the Gemara says that to move it up, to take it onto the pegs, that is tolish. That is a form of kotzer. And the other way around would be a form of zoreya. So a lot of the Rishonim say, on the spot over there, they think that this is all Drabbanan. This doesn't really mean that you're really chayiv, that this is not really an act of tlisha of ketzira or an act of zriya the other way around, that this is a Drabbanan. The Rambam may disagree. It sounds like from the Rambam's language that it's a normal chayiv, like it's a deraisa, but a lot of other Rishonim, Rashi and Tosis and Hagos, Ashri and the Magen Avraham Paskins like this, all assume that this is an act of Drabbanan, this is not a Chi of Daraisa. The impetus to say that is because there is a similar case to pick up a rock that has vegetation on it, which would seem to basically do the same thing. So that is mutter for Kavra Brios. A person needs to take this rock for hygienic purposes, so we allow him to do this because the assumption seems to be that it's an Issa Drabbanan. So sugya later on in Shabbos that we allow Drabbanans to be violated for Kavra Brios and not Daraisas. So therefore the Rishonim will ask, if this is a real Chi of Daraisa, how could we allow it for Kavra Brios? So that's why they assume must be that it's not a Chi of Daraisa, that that's only a Drabbanan, and it's not really considered to be Ksira or Zriya in the other direction. So why isn't it? Aren't you increasing the production of the plant? You're advancing the plant by putting it in. So it's a tricky thing. It seems like that is the case. So the Egle Tal assumes that maybe improving the plant is a malacha, but just accelerating the process one way or another, so it'll grow a little quicker because it's closer to the ground, or a little bit slower because it's farther from the ground, that's not basically being mezarez a malacha, you're basically making it happen faster, that's not considered to be necessarily a malacha, that's an issa d'rabbanan. So based on that, he also has to figure out why there's a difference between, once again, Zriya and Bishul. The same issue, the same two malachas being pitted against each other, because we know when it comes to Bishul, so we're not allowed to stoke the coals, we're not allowed to stir the pot on Shabbos. That's also a problem. So apparently advancing things is more of an issue than when it comes to Zriya. So what's the difference? So it seems like, again, you have to be machalik between Zriya and Bishul, that Bishul is not considered done until it's done. So therefore, everything that you do to bring that about is also part of the malacha. But when it comes to Zriya, so especially the Avnei Nezer, the Egle Tal is assuming like in the Chasinah, so really you are done once you put it in. So once you put it in, just making that process go faster afterwards is not really adding to the malacha, is not something that is significant as far as the malacha is concerned. Okay, so then we moved on to the question of Eino Nakuv. So what if you planted an Eino Nakuv? Is that considered to be a malacha or not? Is that considered to be Zriya? So the Rush said that that is not the derech. The Rush is true, but said that's not the derech of planting. In the Magen Avos, it's a suffix whether or not that's considered to be planting. The Nishmas Adam, he thought that it was considered to be Zareya. He thought that there's a difference between Tolesh and Zareya. They're not perfect inverses of each other. So even if it wouldn't necessarily be Tolesh to take something out this way, to put something in to be Zareya in a potted plant without holes, and that's the Shainanakov, he thinks would be considered to be Zareya, and that that is problematic. So that was a major machlokas, and the Cheskinuch has a suffix that if that were the case, if that was true, that it's considered to be Zareya, putting something into a potted plant, well then what if you would take the plant from inside that pot and take it out and now put it into the ground mamish? So would that be Zareya? It's already Nizra, so to speak, in this pot, and now you're just moving it from the pot into the ground. Would that be even more Zareya? So he has a suffix about that. It seems to be a question of whether or not you can be Zareya something that was already Nizra. If something is already, right, Zriya al-Gabe Zriya, so is it that the Iker connection is the act of Zriya and you're not changing anything now but putting it into the ground? Or would you say that it is possible to add on? That's really only a question if for the Machmirim, for those who say that it is, since many others assume that it's not Zriya, so then they would say, L'chumra, that it's certainly much of a worse thing to then take it and put it into actual ground. It's only according to the Machmirim, it comes out to the Chumra Zakula, that if you think it was already planted in the pot, so then to move it into the ground, we could say maybe that's not an additional act. But since many assume that putting it in the pot is not an act of Zriya, so then for sure, according to them, to move that into the ground definitely would be a serious act of Zriya. So you can trade your kulas and your chumras. And if you're more machmir on putting it in the pot in the first place, there's more room to be makel when moving it from the pot to the ground, and vice versa. So this relates to a different sugya, but it ties back in. So the Rambam has a daya. The Rambam says that if somebody soaks, let's say, grains, chitin and saurin, he soaks grains in water, so that is a tolda of zareya, and you are chayiv in a kalshu, you're chayiv with any small amount. So what is that about? So the Magen Avraham points out that this is different from a Gemara in Zvachim in a couple of ways. The Gemara says in Zvachim that if somebody soaks flax, if somebody soaks pishtan, so then he is chayiv because of wash, some type of kneading. So what's the Rambam talking about in terms of Zareya? So the Magen Avraham assumes he's talking about a whole different concept, that the Gemara is talking about pishtan, they were talking about chitin and saorin, that only becomes Zareya after like a half a day or so. Have to leave it there for a while. And he says there are some people who would put these chitin and saurin in water in order to soften them to give it to your animals. He says that's maisin b'chol yom, that's not a problem. But to leave it there for half a day, that's a problem of zareya. So So what's the nature of the problem of Zareya? How exactly is it Zareya? So some understand, like the Merkabah HaMishnah and the Tiferes Yisrael, that the idea is that it's going to sprout. That this is a way of getting it to grow, and therefore that's what the problem is. It's basically going to sprout. So then it's a question, why is it not immediate like the Mechassinah? Why does it have to wait half a day? So could be because it's a told already, it's a different level of obligation, it's not the same mice as putting it in the ground. It could be also the Magen Avraham's example, again, of giving it for your animals is already not a mice as real. The Radbaz, however, has a different understanding of this. The Radbaz says that the issue is that you are preparing it to take better when it is put into the ground. You're not doing this because you want it to sprout in the water. You're doing it because you want to put it in the ground, and it's going to grow better in the ground once you soak it in water first. So that comes out to be a whole new chumrah, that apparently if you do something that prepares for a malacha, that's also counted as a malacha. There are some achronim who associate this with the Minchas Chinuch, that according to the Minchas Chinuch, basically saying that any step that will bring about the future Zriya is going to be an act of Zriya, so too, soaking it in the water is going to also be an act of Zriya. So the Nishmas Adam says that, oh, you see from here, this is a raya that you can plant in a Atzah She'enon Akuv, because Atzah She'enon Akuv is no worse than this pot of water, and apparently that's considered to be planting. So too, a pot without holes in it, with soil, is also considered to be planting. So others would say, no, it all depends on why you're chayiv for the water. If you're chayiv in the water because it sprouts, okay, so then it's a good proof that it's going to sprout in a potted plant also, and you're chayiv for that. But if it's not about sprouting, but it's about preparing it for a future movement into the ground, so then that's not necessarily comparable to putting it in a pot, and we can't necessarily derive from here that there is any comparison between the two. There is also a point that was made that Vosner, the Shuvah Shevet Alevi, has in his Shuvahs that he thinks this is not comparable to hydroponics that we have today. That we have hydroponics that the water is not stam water, but it's water that's specially treated in order to give it proper nutrients in order to make it more comparable to the ground. So he thinks that's a whole different level. That's not what the Rambam was talking about. And it may be still comparable to an Atzah She'enon Akuv, and you have to figure out in terms of that level whether it's a Daraisa or not. But he thinks whatever it is, you don't have, for example, the Magen Avraham's idea that it's got to last there for a half a day. This is like putting it directly into soil. The only question is whether it's soil that's in a Atzah She'enon Akuv, or whether that's chayiv or not, that's a question to figure out, but it's not the same thing as water in terms of what the Rambam is talking about here. It's a whole different type of water chayiv. Okay, so we said that we would daven mincha right now, so we'll break from